Good evening. Today I've got a Free Gables South Africa White. It's Chenin Blanc, Marsanne and Grenache Blanc 2021. It's from Swartland and it's 12.5%. Now the amazing thing about it is I've never had this particular blend of free grapes before. And so I didn't really know what to expect, but I knew it would be pretty exciting. And essentially, you've got a wine that's kind of midway between, say, a very crisp mineral, steel-cut lemon zest Sauvignon Blanc and a more of a buttercream, toffee notes, fruity Chardonnay. So those are your two sort of extreme styles in white wines. But this one, it's got a lot of sort of fruitiness about it, but there's a crispness about it as well. And it's very good on herbs. I think this is more of a herbal wine. It's more marjoram, thyme, rosemary. And the essence of it is that if I didn't know it was from South Africa, I would honestly say it was a good Rhone white, Village. So it's very interesting that you can take a blend that's completely new to you and you can discover that it's, you know, performing like one of your favorites. So then it's probably worth having a look at the availability of it and the price and think, well, you know, if I bought six of these, could I put those aside as an alternative to a Rhone white? And I do really, really love finding a wine from a completely different part of the world that's very similar in profile to one of my favourites, say French or Italian wines. One of the most surprising variety of white wines in the world actually comes from Italy. There's so many indigenous grapes and they provide completely different wines, you know, way away from the Sauvignons and the Chardonnays. So I'm always trying to find interesting and unusual single grapes from Italy. Now, at this particular moment, I'm doing some grape harvesting for a vineyard in Kent. There's a lot of vineyards in Kent and Sussex which really specialise in sparkling wine, and I think they aim at the London restaurant trade, and they come in at prices way above champagne. Even champagne itself is getting in on the trend. I believe Tattinger has bought up some vineyards in Kent. So this is an exciting trend, you know, which we will see over the next 5 or 6 years as Kentish sparkling wine really comes into its own. So if you are in a restaurant, have a look at the sparkling wines. You might be pleasantly surprised to see something from Sussex or Kent or Surrey on the menu. Wine, you know, as you get more interested in wine, you realise there are quite a number of sort of permutations and levels. For instance, I buy some of my French wine en primeur, so I pay a deposit on it a year ahead, and then even as it's being barreled or bottled, it's wending its way to me slowly. And I will buy cases of 6 and 12 of these French wines, and they are ideal for really special occasions and for laying down for later years. So, you know, even a relatively easy drinking Bordeaux, I probably drink 3 or 4 a year, and it will last me for 3 or 4 years. And it means that I've got a good steady supply of really superb wines. But, you know, I don't have to do anything more than just go to the case and take one out, which is absolutely brilliant. And this is what I try to do, is to have a fantastic array of wines, you know, easily available at any time. So sometimes I buy, say, free wine and I think, this hasn't really reached its perfect drinking window yet. So I will put those other two aside and I'll keep an eye on, you know, they're likely maturing. So just say it's in 2017 and it was a pretty hefty blend. I would think, okay, well, maybe, you know, I'll try that in 7 or 8 years. So that would be, what, 2024, 25, and then see how I think from there on. You know, it may be another 4 or 5 years, maybe longer than that. It may be a really special occasion wine for later in my life. And I do like to feel that I'm cellaring a few of those. It's a big joy for me, because it means that no matter where I go, where my life goes, whether it goes up or down, I've always got some fantastic wines set aside that, you know, I'm going to grow into, and they're going to grow into me. So I also look around for what I call seasoned drinking, and that's the really, you know, lower end price, particularly white wines that I can just enjoy in the fridge, and they're there for any occasion. And then I try to look for some wines which are perhaps a notch down from favourites like white Bordeaux, white Burgundy, white Rhone, and I think, oh, you know, when would these be appropriate for sort of immediate drinking to say 2 to 3 years' time? Albarino, Torontes, Riesling, these are all really good for a little bit of depth. And then really nice wines which are just great at the moment: Vermentino, Viognier, Chenin Blanc, you know, wines which are just a notch up, but they're not so special that you're going to worry if you find you've drunk them all. So I do tend to get cases of 6 wine in that sort of intermediate level from Naked Wines. They're very good for that. Virgin Wines are excellent for these completely off the cuff blends. I kind of use Virgin Wines as a learning curve. There's a nice Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, which is a reserve, which I like from Naked Wines. And I also keep a good few Southern French coming from them, and some Australian as well. They're very, very good at handcrafted boutique wines from very specialist winemakers. And you do feel that you're, you know, developing the world of wine and injecting your investment into building these, you know, really precision projects. I try never to buy wine from the local garage, and I buy very little wine these days from supermarkets and shops. I will buy some from local vineyards, so I'll go to the local vineyard shop and I'll buy some from there. And Leifweitz wines, I have sort of the top end on Premier level. I have some subscription wines which are absolutely, you know, amazing, mesmeric wines, like a Syrah from South Africa, and a fantastic Malbec from Argentine, top of the trees, you know, and a really, really good right bank Grand Vin de Bordeaux. And then I have a mix through the year of really cheap ones, because they're good wines which are, you know, bin ends, so I'm getting them at a discount. I wait until I get an offer, £25 off, or perhaps someone has been very nice and purchased some wines and I'll get a £40 voucher. So that's all good. It brings the outgoing of my wine drinking down tremendously. And then there'll be some really good sort of just say £12 to £18 wines. Again, I will look for them on discount, but these are coming to me from Leifweitz, and they're really, really top quality, easy drinking wines. I just like to feel that before I even open the bottle, I already know what I'm going to taste, because it helps me to plan ahead, prepare for meals, you know, make sure I've got the right wines in for the right friends and all this. I don't drink so many rosés through the year as whites, but I do try and have a fairly good sort of, you know, spread over the different countries and the different grapes. And I go on and off sparkling wines. So some years I manage to have a sparkling wine every 2 or 3 weeks, and other years it's only every, say, 6 weeks. And that's to do with my workload and where I am and what meals I'm wanting and so on. You know, I do mix it up a fair old bit. I have favourite countries for favourite times of the year. So in June, I particularly like light-bodied reds that I can pop in the fridge and I can slice strawberries into. So a particular favourite is Beaujolais. But there are some really great Italian fine, you know, light-bodied wines as well. And whenever I have a light-bodied wine through the year, I just remember that one so I can go for it again. There's a really nice one from Sainsbury's, which is Margaret River Shiraz. That works really brilliantly in the summer. And then I'll tend towards hefty Italians and maybe onto Bordeaux for the barbecue season. And then in September, I like to try and profile as many South African wines as I can. And I'll mix it up a bit in October with Italian, Australian, Portuguese. And as I go into November and December, I'm starting to look at really hefty Rhones and Bordeaux again. In January, I just have this thing where I love to do Italian Fest, and I love to feel that I've done a festival of a month where I did not drink any wines except Italian wines. That's a real challenge because obviously you've got to get those up ahead. February, March, I'll be looking at sort of Portuguese and Spanish blockbusters, maybe some Argentine Malbec, really solid big wines, probably be a couple of Australian in there. And then April through May, I just kind of profile anything that I've neglected a bit over the year. So it can be really fun doing that with countries and styles through the year. And of course, you've always got to have a few, you know, extras just available in case someone pops around unexpectedly. You can pop a white wine in the freezer for 20 minutes to half an hour and even pop ice cubes in it if necessary. Obviously, if you've got a wine chiller, that makes life an awful lot easier. And a lot of people just drink reds. You know, very few people have the very broad spectrum of palate that I have. And so I tend to try and get to know what my friends like. So I just have an eye to a wine that they would particularly like when they come around. When you're looking at Bordeaux and Rhones, there's your, you know, lower priced, easy drinking, and then your much more special wines, which sort of start at about £24 a bottle. So you don't want to be opening those unless it's just the right occasion or you've got just the right meal, in my opinion. And don't forget that sometimes, you know, why open a white when you could open cider? It's easy to neglect the other opportunities. So, you know, always try to broaden your outlook. If you're a Chardonnay person, try Torontos, try Albarino, try Riesling. If you're a Sauvignon person, try Chenin Blanc, try Vermentino, try Viognier, try some of the unusual, more indigenous wines of various countries, and definitely try Sauvignon as a blend. You know, it's surprising what will work with Sauvignon. Again, I did last year, I bought a great many Sauvignons from all over the world so that I could try different ones. I had one from Portugal, which didn't really come across as a normal Sauvignon at all. I had an amazing one from Austria, which really blew my socks off. So it's, you know, always go out on a limb a bit. It's surprising what you can find. Some of my favourite Sauvignons actually just come from South Africa, and they're as cheap as chips. You know, if you go to Spa, you can get their generic crisp white and fruity white. And I think they're South African. And for £5.79, you know, there you are, fridge draw white. They're lovely. Just as good as anything, really. So my speciality, I think, really is just investing in handcrafted boutique wines. I think that's very, very special. And I do try to have a few really, you know, tip-top sort of Pure Fumé or a Chablis or White Burgundy or something that's, you know, top of the trees that I've got an eye to for a nice unexpected meal. Try to broaden your palate as much as possible. Try different countries. Try different price levels in various countries, and never neglect English wine. If you can get to an English vineyard, you're going to be, you know, blown away. Now, the prices, of course, are going up and up because of the customs and excise and the supply and demand and so on. And I'm noticing that wines I was paying, say, £13 for the last 3 years, they've gone up to even as much as £19. And so, to my mind, they've priced themselves out of my market, if not their own market. So you have to be careful. And I do, you know, manage a great deal by buying so many wines during the year on these extreme discounts that I get, which helps to kind of average the price out. But a wine can be just as enjoyable whether it's cheap or expensive. It depends on your mood, the moment, the time of the year, the meal, you know. There's absolutely no rules in wine. You just make your own rules. And you'll see over 2 or 3 years that your taste buds change amazingly. So a wine that you liked 3 years ago, you might not like. That might be because it's aged and it hasn't aged to your liking, or it might be a new vintage but the new vintage is different, or it just may be that you've gone towards a buttercream taste rather than a crisp mineral taste. When you're tasting, it's brilliant to try the wine in different shaped glasses and really try and sort of find profiles within it. Is there anything floral? Is it a blossom sort of wine? Are there any flowers, daisies or dandelions or buttercups that it reminds you of? What about thyme and rosemary? You know, is it herbs? Is it things like mown grass or seagrass? Or does it make you think of something like lemon meringue pie? Is it zesty? Lemon, grapefruit? Lime? Is it more exotic? Lychee, pineapple? You know, is it a soft sort of apricot nectarine? Is it hard like limestone or just granite or chalk? There's so many different flavours in a white wine. And with a rosé, is it reminding you of a white or is it reminding you of a red? Sometimes a rosé, a darker one, can be really excellent in the winter in place of a red wine, and you don't chill it, you just drink it as if it was a red wine. Do explore different meals that you can have. So if you've got a favourite wine, go out on a limb and try something with it that you really wouldn't normally have. So, you know, if it's a white wine, try some lamb. Try fish and chips. Try, you know, maybe an omelette. The exciting thing about wine is it really broadens your life out. It makes you expect great things because you've got wine laying down, and it makes you want to enjoy, you know, more friendships and just getting together and drinking wine for the sheer joy of it. It's a joie de vivre to me. It's about, you know, enhancing your expectation of your enjoyment of life.